is Susan Robb for Teachers for a New Era. I'm talking with Susan Jeffers, who's the illustrator of many beautiful, award-winning, and best-selling books, including Three Jovial Huntsmen, which is a Caldecott Honor book, Brother Eagle, Sister Sky, a New York Times bestseller, and also favorite fairy tales such as Thumbelina, Cinderella, Hansel and Gretel, The Snow Queen, and a particular favorite of mine, The Wild Swans. She's illustrated classic stories, songs, and poems like The Nutcracker, Silent Night, and Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening by Robert Frost. She also has illustrated the popular Macduff series with her friend, author, and illustrator, Rosemary Wells. In addition, Susan's work has been exhibited at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Brooklyn Museum of Art, the Norman Rockwell Museum, and the National Women's Museum in D.C. So Susan, thank you for joining me. And I wanted to start by asking you which artists inspired you when you were young.
That's such a wonderful question. It's a strange answer. Aubrey Beardsley, as a very little kid. I was so taken with that beautiful line that he has, the black and white. So I love black and white books, which is, you know, sort of inspired Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening. N.C. Wyeth. Mm-hmm. Loved his work because they're on the cover of a collection of books that my parents gave us. It was My Book House. And it had, that had the beautiful line in it, and the and they were beautifully drawn. That's why I really was inspired by them, the beautiful drawing.
Now, you've illustrated new stories and classic stories, and I wondered, is it easier to illustrate when it's not been done before?
No. The whole thing starts with just a response to the words or the idea or something that I care about very much. So with me, it's horses or a beautifully told story. But I forget what the beginning of the question was. Whether it's new or old. No, it's just the subject, you know, and what that inspires in me, and whether I want to draw it or not, or whether it just puts me to sleep.
Like trucks.
So we won't see truck books.
No. Or airplanes.
What about? I wondered, in looking at some of the storybooks, like the fairy tale books, do you start by imagining the people in the story, or do you think a lot about the setting first?
It comes simultaneously, I think. When I think of the wild swans, I think of those swans circling in the sky and coming down and picking up their sister and going up into the air. So it's kind of like, I guess you could say it's a kind of a movie, and then I stop it at the place that I think is the most descriptive of what it is I want to say about it. So the picture of Elise being lifted up into the air with her brothers, and what the rope looked like, and how she was hanging, and was it heavy for the swan? So you think about all those things. So it's kind of a picture that comes all together. When I think about doing a whole book, certain images come full-blown, and it's always in great detail of what the people look like, where they are, the clouds, those kinds of things. And then there are ones that I struggle for and I never achieve.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about that in a way of almost like a movie, because one thing I thought, too, in looking at some of the books is that there are a lot of characters, unnamed characters in mm-hmm. the books, but when you look at the book, you kind of get the idea that there are things going on off to the side, a group of people will be standing and maybe they're talking or whatever. It's really interesting because it felt to me like almost in the illustration there were side stories.
That's so nice that if I were to think about what it was I wanted to do, that would be it. I would love that, you know, all the how people look and what they were doing and, you know, what are they doing there, you know, and why do they look that way?
Do kids ask you a lot about how you draw?
Yeah, they ask things I think that they're frightened of, like how long does it take you to do that? And they're totally horrified when I tell them. And I think one of the things that I've been trying very much to do is to dispel the idea that you have to be talented, like you have to be born talented, to draw or to write, because I think we can all do those things. It's how much you really want to do them is what I think what makes it good for you and what makes it good for the drawing. It's, you know, how very much you want to do that. But I think so many kids are turned off by people telling them that they're not talented, specifically with art, if they don't draw beautifully. But that's a learning thing. It's like, you know, nobody jumps full-blown. I mean, Leonardo da Vinci said that everybody can draw. They can. You might not want to, but you can. And you can learn. You can learn to do it reasonably well. And then it depends on how much you love to do it, how much it means to you, how excited you get.
What about different styles of drawing? I mean, mm-hmm. as you were coming along, even growing up or as an artist, were you particularly attracted just to certain styles, or did you go all over the map in illustration?
I definitely didn't go all over the map. And what I think of is people will talk about their favorite comic books when they were little, and the ones that were beautifully drawn, those are the ones I was really attracted to, where there were certain ones that were drawn in ways that made me truly uncomfortable, physically uncomfortable. I couldn't look at them. And that's just who we are, I think, what we're attracted to. And that's what I find fascinating, you know, about art, which is true of everybody. You know, you go to the museum and you're standing looking at this thing that you think is gorgeous and your friend is walking in the other direction, no interest. So I find that fascinating.
What about you work a lot in pen and ink and gouache, and with the detailed art. I mean, what is your process in terms of how do you lay out the process? Do you start with pencil sketches? Mm-hmm. How do you move through the art?
I start out with thumbnails, which are pencil, to get layout and to get feeling and what it is I want to say in that. And then I will go to my, if I've done research, like I did a tremendous amount of research on Brother Eagle, for instance, and I go to my research and I have models. In Brother Eagle, it was a wonderful Lakota Sioux by the name of Maglequay, and he came with his two sons. And we took photographs and we just fooled around all day, you know, taking pictures, and he was kind of acting out parts. And so I take those that I've taken pictures of and I go back and I kind of work them into my my thumbnails. Someone asked me in the talk today, she said, how tight are you to your photographs? And basically I'm not, because I would rather be drawing from life if I possibly could, but you can't get someone to sit there that long. So you kind of, you know, just take photographs and get ideas. But Maglequay in the flesh was fascinating, as his kids were just fascinating. And I could not have gotten those feelings if I weren't with the, you know, with the real person or with the real horses or, you know, whatever it was. So does that kind of help? So I go to those and I work out the details, and then I use a lot of putting my drawing on a light box and then drawing on top of that and moving it around so I get a good composition. And then I'll switch on to a very good piece of archival paper, which is pretty thick, like 360 pound, in case anybody's listening, watercolor. And that goes through a light box. And then I trace off and get, you know, the things that are really important to me down where I want them. And then I'll go, then I've got a pencil, very detailed pencil drawing, and then I'll go over that with a wash, a watercolor wash, of a basic color, like sort of orangey, yellow, something or other, which is a nice base color. And then I will heavy up my drawing, maybe with ink, and then I'll go back in with another watercolor attack, and then I go back in with ink. So it's back and forth, back and forth. So I get something that has the depth that I'm looking for. And I've learned really good techniques for correcting mistakes. Does anybody want to know?
With watercolor? I think so.
Well, it's with gouache. But if you really want to know, the best thing you can do is, if you've got something that you don't like and you can't correct it, but you use gesso. It's a liquefied thing. You use gesso. And it freezes the layer so that nothing can go up, you know, back or forth in it. So it just, it's like putting paper down. It's wonderful. So that's the secret of painting with gouache and watercolor and making a mistake and fixing it. And then you can sandpaper it. You can do all those things.
Wow. Yeah. I wonder about that, because I remember my dad always had an interest in that, but he wouldn't go near watercolor. He liked pen and ink, but he wouldn't go near watercolor because he said it was just way too fluid and just something that was just hard to manage.
It is very hard to manage, but depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for the beauty of the spontaneity of the watercolor, you would never use what I'm saying. If you're using gouache or watercolor, more like oil paint. But oil paint takes too long to dry to do it. And it's different. As long as you're not using watercolor for the spontaneity, but you're using a gouache, which is a very brilliant kind of watercolor, then the gesso works really well for correction. Now you know more than you wanted to know.
No, I think people will want to know that because it's all very helpful. Yeah. Let me ask you about horse stories, because mm-hmm. I know those were of interest to you growing up and also mm-hmm. have been part of your work.
Mm-hmm. What's the question?
you want a question? Well, the question is, what do you think the appeal is of horse stories? I mean, I think kids are just captivated.
I think they're eternal. I think children and animals is just, that's how we are. And I think drawing and children, singing and children, dancing and children, I think it's just who we are. And I think horses just have that just fairy tale, fantasy, carry me away feeling about them. You just know. So they're endless is the answer.
Now, can you tell me some of the, you had done Black Beauty, mm-hmm. What other horse stories or where else have horses played a role in some of your books in what you've picked to do?
Well, every chance I get, I put them in because they're beautiful. So in Brother Eagle, Sister Sky, they're in there. My favorite picture is the three kids on the ponies. I love that. And Nutcracker has horses, as many as possible. Whatever, but just horses. I did My Pony, which is an autobiographical work. Too silly. But and then I just did My Chincoteague Pony, which is also a wish fulfillment. But it's a real story. It's actually a story of my sister and I who went down to Chincoteague, where you pronounce Chincoteague with, like, Chicago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I didn't either. But you it sounds silly when you're down there with all the locals saying Chincoteague. Anyway, it's a real story of my sister and I who went down for the pony sales. And the fascination comes from Marguerite Henry, who wrote Misty of Chincoteague, which kids still love and read. And it's just beautiful, wonderfully written. Love the drawings, Wesley Dennis, and King of the Wind, which are just heartbreaking. Tear your guts up. So it's a real story, and we went down there to watch the pony penning, and the story came out of that, of this little girl who wanted her pony, but she didn't have enough money. And people were passing her money to pay for her pony. It was just astounding. And sort of an interaction between the auctioneer and the people in the crowd to see if there's a child, doesn't always have to be a girl. And they get the pony. It's the cutest thing. My sister and I were sobbing, these two adults. Anyway.
That's great. No, I think it is. I mean, there is something just with horses so mm-hmm. magical, and that people connect with on such an emotional level. Mm-hmm. Do you feel your work has changed a lot over the years?
The only way it's changed, I hope, is that I've gotten better at drawing, and I do go to class to learn. I don't teach it. To learn to draw better, to learn to paint better, and it's my favorite thing to do. My favorite, it's a real busman's holiday. I go at least once a week. I have a wonderful painting teacher, he's Russian, very amusing. I do imitations of him. He left Russia in the 80s when it was still illegal, so he's quite an amazing character. But he's a wonderful teacher and a wonderful painter. Where are we going with that? Has it changed? I hope it's gotten better.
Can you do?
I love it. Yeah.
Can you do an imitation of
Kirill?
Yeah.
He's so funny. Heavy Russian accent. He stands in front of my painting and he says, "Big mess. This is a big mess. You make many mistakes." so bad. And of course, half the you know, the class, if you don't tell them ahead of time that this is what's going to happen, they leave, because that's not the American way. But what I love about him is that he doesn't waste my time. And I love a teacher who just, and he doesn't think he's being awful. He's just telling you what he sees. And that's really what I pay him for. I don't pay any money for someone who's going to tell me how good I am. I don't need to know that, you know, and I don't need anybody telling me good when it's not. And if they say it's good, then I worry about them.
But I think that's really important. I mean, just the fact that you see it as something that, you know, you're still in class and want to be learning.
Yes, because it fascinates me. And it's one of those things that it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, I want to be able to draw people better. I love doing portrait. And I'm looking right now for a good portrait teacher. And I had one. And then he stopped teaching, so I need to find another one. But it's an endless quest for a great teacher. You probably look for a teacher, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, and also just to be able to learn new things. I mean, the excitement of just having new areas to learn.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then when it's something that you really love, to be able to find someone who can help you, it's wonderful.
I agree. So let me ask you one last question, what are some stories that you'd love to do? Do you have some in mind that you'd like to draw?
Gosh, I haven't thought about that. What would I love to do? I still am fascinated by the fairy tales because of the richness of the visual, I think is just fascinating, always. I would love to find the quintessential horse story. My friend Rosemary was hilarious because she's such a good writer, and she said to me, Susan, I would love to write you a horse story, but I just don't get it because she's not a horse person. I would just love to do the drawings and do the drawings and do the drawings. But I can't think of something that I'm absolutely dying to do. I'm working on one by E.E. Cummings, which is poetry. It's a wonderful poem about, it goes, I carry your heart. I carry your heart with me. I carry it in my heart. And it's just beautiful. But that's going to be tough. I don't know how I'm going to do that.
But that's great, though, and it's interesting, actually, to see what kind of, you know, things carry through someone's career in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, a theme and the way that you've talked mm-hmm. about the horses, and also just the areas that people want to mine, like the fairy tales, mm-hmm. and you know, and certainly all of that is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. So, well, thank you for talking with me, and I look forward to hopefully catching up to do that some more again.
Good. Has been lovely. I really, you're fun to interview with.
Thanks very much.